Well, good afternoon, everyone. It is a pleasure to be here. We've been traveling around just a little bit. My wife and the kids are going to summer camp right after services here today. And a few weeks ago, we were down in Richmond. And we were in Richmond because we had kind of a special occasion. It was my son Lucas's birthday. He turned 13 years old, sadly for us. Despite Sarah and I's best efforts, he continues to grow and get older. But I think most of you know my parents moved up to Richmond from Florida earlier this year. My sister Carrie still lives down there, so we wanted to spend some time as a family with one another. So we went down, we played some family laser tag, things you do as a family, of course, and we had a wonderful time. And of course, the family is such a key concept in the Bible that God dedicates 10% of his commandments to it. One out of the 10 is directly focused on it. And anytime you have an ideal that is memorialized in the 10 commandments, it's worth taking a step back just to ponder it just a little bit more. So as a result today, I thought it would be a great idea to revisit the fifth commandment. The fifth commandment. And of course, the fifth commandment is the instruction to honor your father and mother. And I became interested in this commandment a little while ago in kind of a weird and unusual way. I was kind of just pondering to myself, and Sarah hates it that I did this. I thought, if there was one commandment that I would get rid of, which one would it be? And I know that's kind of a weird way to look at it, you know. And to be clear, I don't think we should get rid of any of them. They're all important. All 10 work together, of course. I'm not advocating that at all. But I was just thinking, as a thought experiment, if you had to pick one, which one would it be? And I kind of close my eyes and I think, you know, if Moses was up on Mount Sinai and he didn't bring enough stone and he's running out of space, which one would he abstain from putting on there? Which one would it be? Now, the reason why I say this, again, not because I don't think it's important. Certainly, I do think it's very important. But because if you're doing the other 9 commandments, wouldn't you kind of already be doing this one? I mean, it's called the bridge commandment because it comes between the first set of commandments is talking about the relationship with God and the second set of commandments that are talking about the relationship with other humans. And if you are truly loving God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, and you are truly loving neighbors as yourself, well, wouldn't you kind of already be doing this commandment? If you are showing love and deference to others, including the elders and your parents, and if you have love and respect for others, wouldn't you naturally be in a position to honor your parents? And I think this is especially true if we're thinking about this commandment from just the perspective of kids obeying their parents. And that very narrow application, I could see how this commandment could get swallowed up in the other 9. And in fact, there are plenty of other spots in the Bible that talk about children obeying their parents. So why does this commandment even exist? Is that what this commandment is all about? Is it a narrow instruction to a small subset of the population for a small subset of their lives? Is it clean up your room, be home by 10, be kind to your sister, etc., etc.? Well, what if you don't have any children? Does this commandment not apply to you? What if you're an adult? Do you age out of this commandment? What if your parents are no longer living? Do you just put a check next to this one and call it done? Well, in other words, what are we to do with this commandment? And how does it apply to us both while we're young and while we're old, and from the start of our life to the very end? And how does it, more importantly, help us to enhance our relationship with God himself? Now, I want to start by turning back to Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12. We're just going to jump right into the commandment, and then we'll kind of slow it down and take stock. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12. This is right smack in the Ten Commandments section. We'll read just this one verse. Again, Exodus chapter 20, verse 12. It says, "Honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you." Now, this is a unique commandment in that it's the only one with a promise. I think we realize that. It's also the only one that doesn't have a no or a not in it. Even the fourth commandment, that's remember the Sabbath day, it continues on and it goes and talks about some other no's and nots. And this commandment here also, it's unique in that it's all positive. It's not talking about refraining from sin or from some action. It's geared entirely towards a positive action. And when I read this commandment, at least to me, the part that stands out the most is that word honor, as in honor your father and mother. And that word honor, which we could say the whole commandment hinges on, it's really quite an interesting word. It's one of those words, I think, that it's kind of fun, that when you start to study it, you might understand that it might not mean exactly what you think it means. Now, the word is kabad, it's K-A-B-A-B, and kabad can be used in both a positive and a negative sense. And it's used in over 100 verses in the Old Testament, and the application can vary quite widely depending on the context. Now, I want to show you what I mean here, and I apologize because we're going to kind of be jumping around just a little bit to different scriptures, but I think it's important that we get the context of what this word means, because again, the whole commandment hinges on this word. Let's turn back to Exodus chapter 8. Exodus chapter 8. There are several usages of this word in the Exodus story with Pharaoh. This one that we're going to read here is right after the second plague, which was frogs. And we're not going to recount the story. I think we know it. Frogs come. It was terrible. Pharaoh cries out to Moses and Aaron, and then they ask them to take it away. But we're going to jump into it in Exodus chapter 8 and verse 12. Exodus chapter 8 and verse 12. It says, "Then Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried out to the Lord concerning the frogs which he had brought against Pharaoh. So the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, out of the courtyards, and out of the fields. And they gathered them together in heaps, and the land stank." No doubt about that. But notice this next verse here, verse 15. "But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart." He hardened his heart and did not heed them as the Lord had said. He hardened his heart. That's that same word here, that kabad, translated as harden. And that may not be the exact same usage you're thinking about when thinking about honoring our father and mother. But there's more. Let's go back to 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings chapter 12. And again, this is a big story. We're just jumping into it. And this is right after Rehoboam takes the throne from his father Solomon. And it's in a very precarious situation with the United Kingdom. He's trying to hold it together. And I think you remember the story. The people come to him and say, "Solomon was a taskmaster. If you just ease the load a little bit, we'll serve you forever." And he goes to his two different sets of counselors. He talks to the older counselors, and they say, "Yeah, if you do that, then they're going to serve you forever." And then he goes to the young whippersnappers, and they say, "No, you got to crack the whip here." So that's the story we're going to jump into, because we know how it ends and how it splits the kingdom. But let's notice this in 1 Kings 12, picking up in verse 10, 1 Kings 12, in verse 10. It says, "Then the young men who had grown up with him spoke to him, saying, 'Thus you shall speak to this people who have spoken to you, saying, your father made our yoke heavy.'" That's our same word here, heavy. "But you make it lighter on us. Thus you shall say to him, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist." Let's drop down to verse 14 here, still in the same chapter. "And he spoke to them according to the advice of the young men, saying, 'My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges.'" Now, there are two other examples here. I'm going to just read both of these out because they're quick. But I would suggest to you that maybe this isn't the exact context you're thinking about when you're thinking about this commandment. Genesis 13, verse 2. Again, I'll just read this. It's very quick. Genesis 13, verse 2, it says, "Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold." Rich. That's our same word. And then further down in chapter 18, verse 20, again, I'll just read this. It says, "And the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see." That's really kind of an interesting word, don't you think? This kabad. Now, the shared meaning behind this word, both in a positive and a negative sense, is this feeling of heaviness or something that has considerable weight. In a positive sense, it's used to mean someone of importance or something of value. Now, another way to think about this would be a judge that's deliberating a decision, knowing that whatever he decides is going to set precedence for years and years to come. Well, that decision would be kabad. It would be a weighty decision that had a meaningful impact for years to come. Now, in a negative sense, that same feeling of weight is problematic. It means it's overwhelming and it's oppressive. It's difficult to get a handle on. That's what that word means in a negative sense. And even though this is kind of a nebulous concept, I think we kind of instinctively understand this. And what I mean by this is a few months ago, Sarah and I were shopping for silverware. And we went to different shops and we looked at the different designs and the different patterns and all the things you look for silverware, which is probably not much. But one of the things we were very interested in was the quality of the silverware. We want it to last a long time. So one of the ways you do that is you pick it up and you feel the sturdiness to it. And you know that if you pick it up and it has a weight to it, then you understand that the quality is likely to be better as well. And one of the economic podcasts that I listened to, it talked about this industry around restaurants and how you can hire a restaurant engineer to help you improve your restaurant, either make you people come to it or maybe change the vibe of your restaurant. And so you can hire these people to come out to your restaurant and help you evaluate it. And it says one of the first things that they do when they walk in is they change two things. They change the chairs and they change the silverware. And the reason why they do that is because if you go to an expensive steakhouse, for example, and the entrees are more expensive and it's more pricey, they want you to sit in a padded chair and have heavier silverware, because that gives you the impression that you're at a more ritzy place. And conversely, if they want to increase the turnover at a restaurant, well, they'll do the opposite. They'll make the chair less comfortable and they'll use lighter silverware. And the reason why that works is because our brains just automatically associate weight and value. And we know if it's heavy and it's sturdy, then the quality is to be more. So it's with this example of the word kabad and the verses that we read earlier and this association with weight and value that I want to circle back to the fifth commandment. It says to honor your father and mother, but to put that in a different way, it means to give weight as to something of great value to your father and mother. It's not just that you love your parents, which I'm sure we all do. It's not just that we obey them when we're younger, which I'm sure we all did perfectly. Instead, it's a commandment that is trying to demonstrate a very complicated spiritual principle through the life cycle of a human physical family system. Now, of course, the family structure is a key way that God helps us to understand the relationship that He wants to have with us forever. There's no question about that. But it's also a way to show the importance or something that you hold in high, weighty honor that you should have to your parents through an evolving relationship where the roles and responsibilities may change over time, but the type of honor that is shown does not. Now, I should say that I have fantastic parents, so that helps out quite a bit. I love my parents. They were great growing up. They're still great. Sarah's in the same boat. Her parents are fantastic, and we're very thankful for that. But, of course, not all parents are like that. Some parents are terrible. Some parents don't have the best interest of their kids in mind. Some are absentee. Some may have been abusive growing up. Some may have died early in the child's life. Now, that doesn't remove this commandment. There's no asterisk there next to it. But clearly, the application of how you apply this commandment would have to vary in those circumstances, sometimes significantly so. But we're not going to focus on those outlining cases. That's wildly outside my expertise. Instead, we're going to focus on regular flawed families. And through regular flawed families, I like to investigate through our life stages how we can implement this commandment from young to old and from start to finish and see how we evolve this commandment over time. Because again, this commandment, like all commandments, is a window into God's very character and His very thought process. It's not just a list of rules for a very short and finite period of time when we're physical here on the earth. It's a way to use the physical to help illustrate a spiritual concept. So I've broken this application of this commandment down into three areas, each roughly corresponding to a different life stage as that relationship evolves over time. So these are the three areas I'd like to highlight today. These three means to honor your father and mother means to, number one, to honor them with obedience. Number two, to honor them with listening and obtaining counsel. To honor with listening and obtaining counsel. And number three, finally, to honor them by taking care of their physical needs. Well, stage number one is to honor with obedience. And this is probably the most obvious part of this commandment. And like I mentioned earlier, it's easy for this part to kind of overwhelm the rest of the emphasis. I've read children's Bibles and I've heard children's songs where they just switch out this commandment and they say, just obey your parents. And I think they're coming at it from a good place because this is a very complicated thing to teach. But I'd like to suggest to you today that children just obeying their parents is not exactly what this commandment has in mind. There's much more to it than that. Now, in order to parse this more thoroughly, I want to turn to the other spot where this commandment is given, back in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Because the wording here is ever so slightly different than it is in the first instance of the commandment. And unlike some of the other commandments, it's not just a one-for-one repeat of the commandment when it was given earlier. Deuteronomy chapter 5. We're going to pick it up in verse 16, Deuteronomy 5, verse 16. It says, honor your father and mother. Now, we get that. But here's one of the differences. Honor your father and mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be long. And here's the other difference, and that it may be well with you in the land which the Lord your God has given you. So what has changed between Exodus and Deuteronomy and that God would add this parenthetical thought? He says to honor your father and mother, but, you know, like in the way we've already discussed, fulfill this commandment in the way we've already talked about, as the Lord your God has commanded you. Well, I think the first and the next obvious question is, how was it already discussed? How did the Lord our God already command them previously to do this? Now, the wonderful thing about the Bible is that God makes the important things known. It's not something that you have to hunt and peck for. God's going to make it pretty clear, especially in this case. And God holds up this giant flag here, and he says, if you do this commandment, if you have successfully executed this commandment, then you should expect to see these results, that your days may be long upon the land, and that it may go well with you. That's a huge flag. So all we have to do is identify that flag in other verses and connect them together. Now let's drop down to Deuteronomy 5, verse 32 to get what I mean here. God's going to come around and just recap it again for us. This is just 15 verses away from the commandment. Deuteronomy 5, verse 32, it says, therefore, you shall be careful to do as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. You shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God has commanded you. And here's our flag here, that you may live, and then it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. Now, I want to continue on into the next chapter. We'll remember that there's no chapter breaks in the original text. That's just added for our convenience. So the thought process continues on here, and it explicitly states what obedience matters. Chapter 6, verse 1. Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and the judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, and that you may fear the Lord your God, and keep all his statutes and his commandments which I have commanded you, you and your son and your grandson, and here's our flag, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Therefore, hear, O Israel, and to be careful to observe it. Well, observe what? His moral and his spiritual code of laws, his way of life, that it may be well with you, and then you may multiply greatly as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Now, we could cover other scriptures in the Bible where it explicitly talks about children obeying their parents, parents teaching their children how to be good parents, etc. And the commandment isn't exclusively dealing with child rearing. And it's certainly not talking about breaking down the spirit of someone so that they just obey you in all things. When that's the case, your child may obey you, but at the same time, they may be very much breaking this commandment by not honoring you at all. Maybe just doing it out of fear or out of obligation. And twice, the Apostle Paul brings out this commandment, but he talks about the context of the obedience. I want to notice one example in Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. Both times, the Apostle Paul brings out this emphasis. We're going to pick it up. Ephesians chapter 6, starting in verse 1. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1. It says, "Children, obey your parents." How? "In the Lord. For this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, and that it may be well with you, and that you may live long on the earth. And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Now again, just to restate the obvious, God and the Bible are concerned with child rearing and being good parents. That much is clear. I don't want to in any way discount those concepts. But if you view this commandment just through that lens, then you're missing one of the most important underlying spiritual principles that God's trying to teach us. It's not just about obedience, but obedience through training and instilling God's way of life. Now, we as a congregation also get in on this aspect because children learn by example, of course. They see others in the faith, and they hear the instructions their parents are giving them, and if it doesn't line up, then it doesn't work. We've seen this many times before. And as a result, we also have a role in the application within our spiritual family by providing another model, an example of a way of life that works. And as individual Christians that believe in and support and live the way of life that God requires. Children honor their parents by obeying their teachings and following God's moral and spiritual law. They honor with obedience in the Lord. Now, as your children grow, however, the type of honor evolves. And that takes us to our second stage. Stage number 2 is honor with listening and obtaining counsel. Now, the second part of the application of this commandment is in the transition from childhood to adulthood. And there's no clear dividing line, of course, obviously, but one that evolves over time as children grow in responsibility. And it varies by child, as you would expect. I was a very independent 15-year-old and young adult, and the types of instructions my parents gave me changed quite a bit. When I was 15, they were no longer giving me tasks and ordering me to do things. Instead, they were trying to guide me to make my own decisions and trying to just help me along the way versus telling me to do things. Every child's different, of course, but it is important that that transition does occur. Now, I want to notice something back in Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. This is at the beginning of families, I guess you could say. We're going to start reading in verse 21. But up to this point, there was just a single created being, just Adam. And God gave him the opportunity to do things by himself. He had to tend the garden. He had to name the animals, etc. But in this, it was realized that he really needed a partner, someone to be with him, and a helper comparable, as it is stated. And I want to pick up the story in Genesis chapter 2, verse 21. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 21. It says, "And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh in its place. Then the rib which the Lord God had taken from man, he made into a woman, and he brought her to the man. And Adam said, 'This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Now let's notice this next verse here, verse 24. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Now, I often kind of chuckled at this because, like, who is this written for? Like, there's no context to Adam and Eve. They were the first people ever. They didn't have physical parents they could relate to. They hadn't had any children yet, so they themselves weren't parents. So obviously, this wasn't written for them in that moment. It was written for those that followed, including us. And it signifies a change in a relationship. The man and woman leave, or they are relinquished, as that word also means, from the direct responsibility of their parents, and they begin their own cycle. And children don't stop honoring their parents because they're not getting and responding to tasks and commands. Instead, the way they show honor changes as they continue to weigh the value and the importance of their parents by proactively seeking their wisdom, their guidance, and their counsel. And there are a couple of proverbs that we can turn to that highlight this aspect. There are a dozen or so that I came across. I just want to point out a couple. I want to go to Proverbs 23, verse 22. Quite a few you could turn here, turn to in Proverbs, rather. Proverbs 23 and verse 22. It says, "Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begots a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice." Now, all of these are proactive instructions for an individual leaving childhood and entering into adulthood, but still seeking out the wisdom and the guidance of their parents. It's about identifying and putting value on the experiences of your parents. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 8 and 9. This is a short one. I can just read this one. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 8 and 9. It says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck." Finally, one other example in Proverbs, this time Proverbs 6, verses 20 through 23. Proverbs 6, verses 20 through 23. It says, "My son, keep your father's command and do not forsake the law of your mother." Does that sound familiar? "Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them around your neck. And when you roam, they will lead you. And when you sleep, they will keep you. And when you awake, they will speak with you. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law a light. Reproofs of instructions are the way of life." Now, there is a quote that I heard when preparing for this message, when I was listening to a few other sermons, and I wish I would have captured the author. And it said, "By the time you realize your father is right, you probably have your own son that thinks you're wrong." And I really like this quote because to me, it really highlights this part of the commandment and that how hard it can be to do this throughout your whole life. That honoring your parents truly is seeking out their wisdom and counsel, and it can be overlooked far too easily. Or that once you kind of get your feet underneath you, you start your career and whatnot, that you think maybe you kind of don't really need them anymore. And not only that, in our modern society, we often move away from the house when we start jobs. I did when I started my career. And it's just harder to stay in frequent, constant contact and to be around all those informal chit-chats where you pick up so much wisdom and guidance. But this is a lifelong way to honor your parents, to constantly and continually seek out their wisdom and their guidance, and then to give it the weight it deserves. This is also the point where the rest of us, again, as a spiritual family and outside the physical family, can help fill in the gaps in support and to re-emphasize that connection from the young adult back to their parents. There's a scripture in Titus and several other like it that talk about older women instructing the younger women. Same thing for the older men to be instructing the younger men. It's not just that they're teaching them principles in the Bible, which they should, or specific skills, but it's again to reforge that connection back from the young back into their physical family. Now, there's an old saying that it takes a village to raise a child. And although there's probably a lot of truth to that, there's an interesting example in the Bible that talks about this, and it's in Deuteronomy chapter 21. I want to turn back there. Deuteronomy chapter 21. And I've seen this example here in Deuteronomy chapter 21, and I've seen it held up many times in anti-Bible arguments. But I think it really brings out something interesting, specifically within this aspect of the fifth commandment. And not only within a specific physical family, but also within a larger community. And Deuteronomy chapter 21 is in the midst of a lot of civil instructions on how to run a physical nation of Israel. There's lots of nitty-gritty things like if someone does X, you need to do Y, or if something happens here, you do that. But more to the point, it's trying to establish a framework about how you set up a civil society in running a physical nation. And I want to pick this up in Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 18. Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 18. It says, if a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and who, when they have chastised him, will not heed them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of his city, to the gates of his city. And they shall say to the elders of this city, of his city, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious, and he will not heed our voice. He's a glutton and a drunkard. Then, verse 21, all the men of his city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall put away the evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Now, people have used this example over the years in mockery of the Bible. They say that, like, if kids don't clean their room or they break curfew, that you're supposed to take them out back and stone them or something like that. That this is just another example of a bloodthirsty Bible. But there's a lot in this passage that can only be understood when it's filtered through the fifth commandment. This isn't talking about a child. It's someone who's reached adulthood. And it's not just about not doing specific instructions. It's highlighting that when the fifth commandment breaks down, it breaks down a whole lot of things within the society. And when someone goes way off course, that no one can reach him, not only his parents, but also the whole community, that symbolizes a community failure. And in the end, at least in this example, the entire community had to share in the punishment. And that was to symbolize that it was a community failure. Now, of course, this individual did not honor their parents, but the rest of the community was also not able to help get this individual back on track. They were not able to redirect them back into their parents. Now, this is obviously a very extreme example and one that is focused on running a civil society, but hopefully the message is clear to us even today. People honor their father and mother by seeking out their wisdom and their counsel. And we, as a spiritual family, also need to support that process along the way. Now, this second stage of honoring your parents, it likely goes on the longest part of our lives. But over time, it merges into the third stage of this commandment, the third stage, and that is honoring by providing for the physical care of our parents. The last application of this commandment is to honor your parents by providing for their physical care. And that means to literally ensure that they're physically provided for and that their physical needs are met. And there are precious few examples of healthy families in the Bible. Very few that I could find, especially if you're looking for a multi-generational example of something that worked well in the Bible. And I know that's not what the Bible is about, but what it does mean is if you find anything along those lines, you really need to read into it and pick out what you can. An example that is in the Bible that we should take stock of is the example of Ruth. Now, if you do a Bible study on the fifth commandment, or you research or listen to any sermons or any articles, inevitably they're going to bring up Ruth because it's one of the best examples in the Bible. But if you think about it, this example doesn't really fit the mold. I mean, after all, Naomi wasn't her parent. It was her mother-in-law. And she actually disobeyed a direct command from Naomi. Naomi said to go back to her town. And Ruth says, no, I'm going to stay here with you. I'm going to stay here instead. But I don't think you could find a better example in the Bible, or even one in secular stories or in our secular life, of someone that puts it more selflessly on the line for their parents than Ruth. That's Ruth and Naomi, they left what little they had in Moab to come into Israel, where they had truly nothing at all. And the first thing that Ruth did was to go out and work to provide support for her family. What would have Naomi have done if Ruth didn't come? It would have been very difficult for her to survive. But also in this story, we see the transition into this third application of honoring your father and mother. Now, Ruth is very much providing for Naomi, but she continually goes back and forth and seeks Naomi's counsel over and over again. And when she gets that counsel from Naomi, she values it greatly and she acts upon it. But throughout the whole story, she's constantly thinking about Naomi and how that she can ensure that she is provided for physically. That's how much great weight and honor she gave to her mother-in-law. Now, what a contrast that story is to an issue that Jesus Christ had to confront in Mark chapter 7. You can turn back there. You would hope that the way Ruth acted would be the norm, but we know from experience that that is not often the case. And Jesus Christ, he had to take the leadership of his day to task by holding up a magnifying glass on how they were lacking in honoring their parents' physical needs. Now, we're going to pick up the story in verse 5 of chapter 7. But leading up to this point, the Pharisees were confronting Jesus as to why his disciples weren't ritually washing their hands before they eat. It wasn't a cleanliness thing, it was a ritual thing. We're going to pick up the story again in Mark 7, verse 5. Mark 7, starting in verse 5. It says, "Then the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, 'Why do your disciples not walk according to the traditions of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands?' And he," that's Jesus, "answered and said to them, 'Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, for it is written, "This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me."'" Now notice how Jesus Christ is already setting up this principle here by using analogy of people that are trying to show the appearance of honor, but in reality are just doing the bare minimum that they can get away with. Verse 7, "And in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandments of God, you hold to the traditions of men, the washing of pitchers and cups and many other such things you do." And he said to them, "All too well you reject the commandments of God, that you may keep your tradition." Now what is Jesus Christ talking about? What is the specific thing he wants to address here? Verse 10, "For Moses said, 'Honor your father and mother, and he who curses his father or mother, let him be put to death.' But you say, 'If a man says to his father or mother, "Whatever profit you might have received from me is Corban," that is, a gift to God, "then you no longer let him do anything for his father or his mother, making the word of God of no effect through your traditions which you have handed down, and many such things you do." Now, this action of Corban is kind of a loophole of sorts that was getting executed as a way to skip this fifth commandment. Now, the practice was someone would dedicate their possessions to the temple and maybe give an offering. And when they did that, they were freed from the financial obligations of their parents. In fact, it was such a sacred vow that it was considered sacrilege if you did this Corban, and then later on you decided, wait, I actually do need to help my parents. That vow to the temple was considered more important than financially supporting your parents. But Jesus Christ, he didn't just condemn this action. He did something much, much more meaningful. He led the way by example. One of his very last actions that he did as a physical human being at his crucifixion was to take care of his mother. Now, I want to read this example in John chapter 19. But as you're turning back there, I want us just to reflect on how powerful of an example this is. Jesus Christ, he had other siblings, so this wasn't his sole responsibility here. And obviously, he had the faith that he was going to be resurrected and that he was God. I mean, he could have just made Mary trip over a stone filled with gold coins or something like that. I mean, there's a million ways he could have supported Mary. So you would have thought that this would have been the last thing that he needs to worry about as he's suffering and dying on the stake. But this is Jesus Christ we're talking about. He is amazing, obviously. And he led with such a powerful example that demonstrates everything that is God's love and everything that is God's way of life. And he did that in an action that reinforced the fifth commandment forevermore. John chapter 19, verse 25. John 19, 25. He says, "Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother, and his mother's sister, and Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. And Jesus therefore saw his mother, and the disciple whom he loved standing by, and he said to his mother, 'Woman, behold your son.' And he said to the disciple, 'Behold your mother.' And from that hour, that disciple took her to his own home." I think that sets a very high bar for us to follow, doesn't it? Honoring our father and mother includes ensuring that their physical needs are taken care of. Well, through these three stages, we see that honoring our parents is a lifelong process. But just like any other commandment, if we execute these exact steps, if we obey, if we listen for wisdom and counsel, and we physically support, that's really just the bare minimum we should be doing to be executing this commandment. That's the minimum that is required. We still need to connect that physical commandment to a greater spiritual principle that God is trying to teach us. And this is something that we must strive to do regardless of how old we are and regardless if our physical parents are still alive or not. Let's head back to Malachi chapter 1. Malachi chapter 1. I want to shed just a little bit more light on this. Malachi chapter 1. Now, the book of Malachi, if you remember, it uses this question and answer format. And it does that to kind of have a dialogue to show just how far the people have gotten off course. And one of the most famous ones in there, God says, "Will man rob God?" And then he answers his own question. And he talks about how they're doing that. So this is the format of the book of Malachi. But I want to notice verse 6 in Malachi chapter 1. Verse 6 in Malachi chapter 1. He says, "A son honors his father, and a servant his master. If then I am the father, where is my honor? And if I am the master, where is my reverence? Says the Lord of hosts to you priests who despise my name. Yet you say, 'In what way have we despised your name?' You offer defiled food on my altar, but say, 'In what way have we defiled you?' By saying the table of the Lord is contemptible. And when you offer the blind as a sacrifice, is it not evil? And when you offer the lame and the sick, is it not evil? Offer them to your governor. Would he be pleased with you? Would he accept you favorably? Says the Lord of hosts." Now, the priest here may have been obeying the bare minimum letter of the law. I mean, they were offering something on the altar as a sacrifice. But God uses this principle of honoring your father and mother to show that it's not just a mechanical set of steps you go through on a checklist. There is a point to all of this. Now, I want to circle back to where we started and go back to Deuteronomy chapter 5. I want to bring this back into the fuller picture of a spiritual principle that God has gone out of his way to show us. Deuteronomy chapter 5, we're going to start again with our commandment. Deuteronomy 5, verse 16, it says, "Honor your father and mother, as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be long, and that it may be well with you in the land which the Lord your God has given you." Now, the inverse of this promise is really just a few commandments earlier, with commandment number 2. Let's back up to verse 6 here, still in Deuteronomy 5, verse 8, rather. Deuteronomy 5, verse 8. It says, "You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above," this is commandment number 2, "or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them." Notice this. "For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments." well, why in the world would I be punished for something my grandfather and my great-grandfather did? I've never even met my great-grandfather. So why would that be the case? Well, I think the answer here is where we stop just short in Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. I think this is a great summary from God. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hands, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates." When individuals pass or they decline this calling, then the physical repercussions can last generations. Sin and pain and suffering start a spiral that can be very difficult to climb out of. The second commandment warns us specifically of this. But the fifth commandment shows us a better way. It shows us what to do if we do want to take this calling and focus on it and pass it forward to the next generation. There are two cycles. One reiterates negatively, the other one goes positively. Honoring your father and mother has practical applications, physical things that must be done for our physical family. But the spiritual principles of what honor actually is and how honor can be applied and how honor in our spiritual family that God is building forever, those are the real spiritual principles. Those are big. Those are huge. Those are fantastic spiritual principles. And they're all summed up and bound together with just five simple words. Honor your father and mother. You start with your physical parents, you build to your spiritual family, and then your spiritual father for all eternity. Well, in conclusion, and on the surface, the fifth commandment seems like it's a simple thought. Just obey or just love your parents. That all you need to do to really pull off this commandment is to just, you know, be good to your parents, treat them nice. But if you really pull out this commandment and you investigate it from all aspects and really dig into it, you realize that it's much more than just a simple one-line instruction with a promise tagged on to the end. It's called a bridge commandment, one that bridges the first set to talk about our relationship with God and the second set with our relationship with others. But it's also a bridge commandment that wraps into it a weighty concept of value. And it uses this physical family structure as a way to understand how to treat relationships that have deep personal value to you, and then how you can use that honor throughout your entire life cycle. We show honor to our parents by first obeying them, by seeking out their advice and their counsel, and then by providing for their physical needs. Unfortunately, as is too often the case, I think Sarah was right. I don't think we can just leave off this commandment. I think that if Moses didn't bring enough stone up to Mount Sinai, he's just going to have to carve a little smaller. God did have it right in that he had all 10 commandments work together as a cohesive unit. It's a key, this fifth commandment, to our spiritual life and our spiritual family that God is putting together forever. If God ever asks us, as he did in Malachi's day, "Where is my honor?" Let us be confident that we do know how to honor him because we've been practicing and spending a lifetime within our own physical family while we're working hard to observe the fifth commandment.